good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis, and the late Patty Fink assures us that she's running late. And she will be here. And yes, we'll all vouch for that, she is on her way. Our guest today is Mark Farris. Mark is running for Senate District 8 for the Texas State Senate. And if the name is familiar, it's because he's been a guest of ours a number of times. Mark and Vic were two of the marriage equality plaintiffs. They had a book written about them, and your author was on with us. Mark, what made you decide suddenly to run for state senate?
Good afternoon. That's a very good question.
Of course it's a good question. Do I ask bad questions?
Exactly. I've never known you not to ask a very good question. I've been a Texas citizen since 1985, so I've lived in Texas for 32 years, and I've lived in Collin County for 14 years, and so I care deeply about Texas, and I care deeply about my district. So that's clearly one of the reasons why I decided to run. Another reason is that as I looked at the legislature this past session, and probably for past couple sessions, I actually saw a need to run. The legislature has been spending a lot of time on issues that, in my opinion, are not really important issues. They're very divisive issues, harmful issues that hurt the state's reputations. Top of mind is the bathroom bill. There was no problem. It was a piece of legislation that was proposed in search of a problem. It hurt the state's reputation. In fact, Texas Competes has calculated that the amount of negative publicity that the state of Texas received as a result of the bathroom bill in this last session was more than $220 million worth of negative publicity. Mm-hmm. That's substantial. That's a black eye to the state of Texas. While they're focusing on that, and they weren't focusing on the important issues that matter to the lives of all the citizens in the state of Texas, as well as the citizens of my district. And top of mind is education. The state's woefully underfunding education. They're not keeping up with the growth in population. In fact, over the last 10 years, while spending has increased 7.4%, the students have actually increased 16.8% over the last 10 years. And the result is that the spending by the state in the last 10 years has actually declined by $339
per student.
Right.
Yeah.
And if the state had maintained its level of spending from 10 years ago, that would have been an extra $18.6 billion of spending on education in the state of Texas. So I want to bring common sense approach to the legislature, get us off of talking about issues that are irrelevant, that are divisive and harmful. And so that's really, those are my reasons for running.
But if we don't talk about bathroom bills, where will people pee?
They'll pee where they've always peed.
I guess that's a good answer.
It is.
You know, when you talk about the number of students that have increased in the schools, between the last census and the census before, Texas's population increased by 5 million people. Mm-hmm. That's a huge increase.
Correct.
That increase, it's going to be about that size increase this time, or even larger. I don't see us building new roads. I don't see us building schools. You live in Garland, Laurent.
No, a lot of repairs, but nothing new.
Yeah. I haven't seen any new schools here in Dallas. I guess a few, but we keep encouraging businesses to come to this state, but we don't want to invest in what we need to support those people. My neighborhood, I live down in Oak Lawn. All of these single-family houses, they're gone. All the one- and two-story apartment buildings, they're gone, all replaced by six-story buildings. Well, that's nice that we have higher density, but I don't see more room on the roads, and some people are taking DART, but there's a DART station across the street from where I live, but it doesn't go to where I'm going. It doesn't go to my office.
Right.
So we keep encouraging all these businesses. We're on the finalist list right now for Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren, you said we're what?
All I know is Houston and Dallas both made the top 20.
Top 20. Okay, so we're in the top 20. That's going to be 50,000 jobs. If that ends up right here in Dallas, that's 50,000 more people. Where are they going to go? And we're not spending the money.
Well, 50,000 more people in their families.
Right. That's absolutely correct. The population is increasing, and it's the same both in education as it is in transportation. You have an increasing population, a growing population, and yet the spending is not being maintained and increased commensurate with that population increase, and that's absolutely something that has to be addressed. One of the things that is helpful in that regard is the Texas high-speed rail project that's proposed between Dallas and Houston. That is being privately funded for the most part, and that project needs to be encouraged and frankly should be replicated in other areas in the state, whether it's between Dallas and Austin or Austin and San Antonio or Houston to San Antonio. That project, because it is privately funded for the most part, helps takes the pressure off of the need to spend on I-45, and that then frees up money for other projects. So it's one way of freeing up money for the transportation issues that, mm-hmm. that must be addressed in the state of Texas. And the state of Texas also is experience other pressures on those revenues that fund transportation. For example, as we have more fuel-efficient cars, and as we go to more electric cars, then the revenues that you get from your gas tax decline. And one of the ways things we're going to have to look at is finding ways of getting revenue from vehicles that use the roads but that are not paying a gas tax. So you're absolutely right about transportation.
Patty, who finally got here. Ice
and roads are crowded.
It's all that density.
And she just couldn't remember what time the show started. So there's that.
I'm welcome, Patty.
She drives a Prius. We need to tax her.
Yeah, Vic and I both drive hybrids. Vic drives a Prius, and I drive a hybrid.
Yeah, which are great for fuel efficiency, but poor for revenue and gas tax.
Lauren, I think we should propose a tax. Yeah, I know, exactly.
Yeah, we are.
Exactly. Mine gets 15 miles to the gallon. No, it's better than that.
Well, somebody has to average us out.
So I'm paying their taxes.
Thank you. We really appreciate that. That's wonderful.
I am too.
When did you first decide to run? Or when did you first start thinking about running? You decided to run at the very last minute.
That's correct. I started thinking about running after the Virginia elections. I have, over the years, and even as a kid, frankly, I thought about that I might be interested in running for public office. But once I came to the realization that I was gay, I essentially gave up on and had to accept it. There were two things that I thought in my mind that I had to give up. One was the right to marry, and one was the ability to ever run for political office. So I kind of put those out of my mind. Well, as you know, we now have the right to marry. And after looking at the results from Virginia, it dawned on me that perhaps I needed to stop assuming what Texans, how they'll vote, and give them a choice on how to vote. And so that's what made me start thinking about it. And ultimately, as I looked at my district, Senate District 8, and as I looked at that, I realized that Trump had only won it by 8 percentage points in 2016. Since then, the demographics have changed dramatically. We've had an influx of other corporate headquarters moved there, most notably Toyota. And in 2017, according to 538, in the 70 special elections that have occurred this past year, there has been a swing of 12 percentage points, primarily in the suburban areas, which, by the way, is my entire district. There's been a swing of 12 percentage points. And in Virginia, the Democrats won those races by 8%, by 10 percentage points. So whether it's 10 percentage points or 12 percentage points, it absolutely convinced me that the race was winnable, and that I should not assume how my constituents, if I'm so lucky to be elected, my constituents, how they would vote. So that's why I decided to run.
Well, give them a reasonable choice, too.
Well, I'm speaking of choice. One of the things that's been sort of a phenomenon of Collin County and rural counties all over the state that are pretty solidly red is that Democrats in those regions typically have to vote, say, in a Republican primary in order to have any say, because the Democratic primary maybe has one race or two races or barely any candidates. But that's not the case now. What do you expect, a big turnout? I mean, there are Democrats running all over Collin County all kinds of offices,
every ticket,
at the state level, at the congressional level. What are your thoughts now on the Democratic turnout for the primary in Collin County?
Well, I think it's going to be as it has been throughout this year. It's going to be substantially higher than it has been in the past, and we have the data. We've looked at the data. Campaign staff have looked at the data. We know who we're going to target. We know the votes that we can bring out, and we're confident that we can. The other really good thing about this year is, you know, I'm not the only candidate running. There are every office position up and down the ballot has someone running for that, and more than just one, generally. Running up and down the ballot in Collin County. That helps us all. The votes that I'll turn out will help them, and the votes that they turn out will help me. And so even if I may not be able to knock on every door, they'll knock on a lot of doors, I won't, and et cetera. And that's going to that's going to benefit us all. And clearly my intent is to reach every voter in my district who is a Democrat in the primary, and then in the general, I'm going to reach the Democrats, I'm going to reach the independents, and I'm going to reach those persuadable Republicans.
Good. Your race is, we don't want to talk a lot about money because it drives Patty crazy. but your race is going to be an expensive race. There have already been some TV ads for one of your opponents on the Republican side, not against you, but right. Yeah, on the Republican side, and if they can afford TV for a primary, that's going to be an expensive race.
And it's a splashy ad.
It is a splashy ad. It's a nice introductory ad.
And the opponent is, what's his name, Philip Huffines?
Correct, the twin brother of Don Huffines.
Of Don Huffines, right. I just didn't know his first name. I knew it was Huffines. But,
and that's all he cares that you know, is that he's a Huffines. That's really... I mean, seriously, that's his name recognition.
That's it. Correct.
So we know it's going to be an expensive race, and I know that was one of the considerations one of the things you took into consideration in deciding whether or not to run was, can you put this together? And you decided you could.
Well, I do think it's going to be an expensive race. And we intend to go out and... raise the necessary monies to be competitive. I think I can do that. I think I can do that across the state of Texas and within my district, and I look forward to running a race. You know, I'm not independently wealthy. I'm going to have to earn the support of the voters, and I'm going to have to earn the support of their contributions, and I look forward to that.
On the good side, we've seen in the past year also that a lot of people who have won were not they weren't necessarily the top fundraisers either.
Right.
So you don't have to have money to win necessarily.
If that's exactly right. If generally speaking, if the key to winning was how much you had to spend, was always the determinant, a factor in that race, Democrats virtually would never win.
Right.
That because they generally are outspent, but I think particularly now we actually have the message. I also think we have the right issues. I also think we're right. I can't think of a better time to be running, and it's one of the reasons why I chose to run.
It's a very winnable race.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we saw an example of that with our president. He wasn't the top fundraiser.
No, he was not.
But he won.
There you go. That's,
exactly.
Yeah. I think he was the top reimbursee, though, in the race.
You're probably right.
We're at a breaking point, so let's break it right now. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. My math isn't working because it's so cold outside today. It's like 31 degrees, something like that.
I think it's 26.
Yeah. But you know what? Before we go to break, I want to wish Josh happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Josh.
Happy birthday, Laurent. Thank you.
Laurent was yesterday.
Yes.
And here's us today. It's a happy birthday, everybody. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly. Our guest is Mark Farris. He's running for state senate seat number 8, which is mostly Collin County. We'll be back with more right after this.
89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Our guest is Mark Farris and his husband, Vic Holmes, who's also here. So welcome, Vic. You've been just kind of making comments from the side, but...
That's pretty much what I do.
I was going to ask, how long did it take you to convince Vic that you would run? Or did you need his blessing first?
It's less than 10 seconds.
I would never pursue a candidacy without his blessing and support. And we talked a lot about it. And with Vic, the nice thing about him is it's kind of biblical. But where I go, he will go. And so he was actually supportive and more encouraging and eager for me to run than probably I was.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, he came in and he said, so what would you say if I decided to run for the Senate? And I said, okay. So it was a really tough choice.
Push your arm.
That's kind of how it was with me and Brian. Like, when we had planned this whole wedding that was going to take place on stage at a Turtle Creek Chorale concert in front of 950 of our closest friends. I came home one day and I said to Brian, oh, by the way, we're getting married on June 8th. And he said, oh, okay, whatever. The most romantic proposal ever, you know? And that's kind of how you are, Vic. You had been through this already, though, when you decided, should we sue for marriage equality?
Pretty much. And once again, it was Mark that had most of the angst, because, you know, he's the one that's actually running. But it was the same decision process. Okay, if you want to do this, let's do this. If you don't want to do this, okay, we won't do this. But it doesn't matter either way. I'm still going to be here. So.
I have a question. I'll get your input here about the Texas Senate.
Sure.
It's 31 seats, 31 votes. 21 right now are red. GOP. I'm eager to get rid of my state senator and very, very happily supporting a young man named Kendall Scudder, who's from East Texas, and I'm in Senate District 2. But we need what? We need 6 seats to take back the Senate? What do you think our chances are if you look across the state and the candidates running and the winnable races in those Senate seats? Do you think that's possible this cycle, or we make a big dent?
Well, that's a very good question, and I don't know that I've looked to see what the chances are in everyone else's race. To be honest, I've primarily been focused on mine. My last 3 weeks have been pretty incredible. the amount of work that I've had to go through in 3 weeks on this candidacy has taught me that I have an incredible greater appreciation for candidates than I ever had before. But look,
He's drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But if you look at Virginia, no one even thought that the Democrats were going to pick up the number of seats that they did in their assembly, and that they would wind up tied. That was unfathomable. So I would suggest that, even though I haven't examined each race, I would say that that is not out of the realm of possibility. If you just look at all the demographics and as I mentioned earlier, on all the special elections that have occurred, the 12 percentage points, if you have a 12 percentage point switch in the votes across the state of Texas for the D side, I would not rule out at all taking back the Senate.
And Trump actually won Texas by a mere 9 points, right, which is the closest it's been in some decades.
Right.
Even.
Yeah.
It says a lot in itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to go through this process because it's not simple. You know, you need to raise a lot of money. You're going to be... You're putting yourself out there again, and you're laughing, but what did you learn from your marriage equality fight that you're going to put into your Senate campaign?
I learned a lot from the marriage equality fight. First of all, I learned how to better, I'm definitely not perfected, how to better talk in front of a microphone, whether on the radio or on TV on an interview. So I've learned how to do that. Before that, I would just freeze. So that's improved. Secondly, I think I learned how to talk to Texans. And I believe actually that's one of the things that I bring to the table that I don't know that my primary opponent brings to the table, is that I've spent now 3 years talking to Texans about the need for LGBT Texans to be treated equally, and I did it in a way that was very respectful and hopefully persuasive, and I think it was. And when I say I talked in a way, it wasn't just me; it was also Vic and Nicole and Cleo, our co-plaintiffs. But I think all four of us were able to talk in a way that I do think helped move the needle. And yet we were extremely respectful of anyone who disagreed with us. And that is exactly how I want to approach this race. I want to go out and express my views, but I also want to listen to my prospective constituents. And whether someone votes for me or not, even if they vote against me because I'm gay, I intend to listen to them, because I think if I'm elected, I'm the senator for the entire district, not just those who voted for me. That's actually one of my criticisms of the current administration, is they seem to only be representing the base. And to some extent, I think that's a criticism of some of the Texas leadership, that they've only thought about issues once they became a lieutenant governor, that they were only the lieutenant governor of their base, not of the entire state. And they've, to a large extent, forgotten that they're also the lieutenant governor of LGBT Texans. And so my position would be, I would be the representative for everyone in my district, even if I may not agree with everyone.
Do you know, that's when I fell in love with Danica Rome, who is the transgender candidate, mm-hmm. Not candidate, the transgender
delegate
right. In Virginia. Somebody asked her a question about her opponent, and her opponent ran as the chief homophobe in Virginia. And do you have some kind of a comment or something you want to say to him? And she said, oh no, he's my constituent now. I don't speak badly of my constituents.
Exactly.
What a great statement. I mean, it was both sarcastic, and that appeals to me, but it was very genuine. She was not going to say any. She wasn't going to be a sore winner.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And we've seen a lot of that lately. Yeah.
You know, you had talked about before the show, you know, one of your goals is to bring back common sense a consensus mentality to the legislature. I just wondered if you could talk about how do you plan on doing it in this world we live in now where fake news, the idea of fake news dominates the headlines and it has serious consequences. People believe it. How do you plan on doing that?
Well, my answer to that is I can't control what someone's going to say about me. I can't control that. All I can control is what I do on a day-to-day basis, day in, day out. And so I will work to reach out to all my constituents of any, wherever they are in the entire district, whether they vote for me or not, and I will just continue to work for them. And then I will also work to reach out to everyone else who's in the Senate with me, if I'm so honored to be in the Senate. I will work to fight for my constituents in the Senate on a day-in-day basis, and I hope that over time that, first of all, if I've won, I've already persuaded them that I'll fight for them, and then two, then I'll demonstrate that I will fight for them, because I will. And so whatever is on the side, whatever's on the periphery, whatever, you know, fake news or anything else, I can't control that. I can just control what I'm going to do, and that's all I'm going to focus on.
Now, this is an open seat, right?
It's an open seat.
So the previous senator representing that district has decided to run for Congress.
Correct.
How many Republicans on running in the primary?
There are two Republicans and two Democrats. The two Republicans running are Ann Paxson, Angela Paxson, and Phil Huffines.
Yeah.
That's popcorn worthy. We need to get our popcorn out to watch that one.
I wish it was a lot more boring. I wish it was a lot more straightforward that Mark would win and get through it.
and one thing, because we are coming into campaign season, that we do have to say, you have an opponent in your primary.
Correct.
And if he would like to come on the show, we welcome him to come on.
He's a great guy. Brian Shapey is his name. He's a married father of two. Engineer, has been a citizen of Plano from his entire life. He's a very nice guy, and we're going to run a very competitive race with him, but a very polite race. And he and I have both talked about that, and neither one of us are going to do anything that would hurt the other's chances in the general. And if he is the nominee, I will absolutely support him and work to help make sure that he wins. And I expect he'll do the same.
Awesome.
You have name recognition to some extent. Actually, three of you in this race have
some sort of name
recognition. You recognize him, Vic. Well, I'm glad you do.
Until Alzheimer's sets in.
It's been interesting to watch how much publicity you've gotten over entering the race. Has that surprised you?
It has. I've
seen articles foreign.
Correct.
In other languages.
Thankfully there's the translation button because I saw the articles in German. It's been I've received a fair amount of publicity and I don't know that I was expecting that. What I focus on though is what really matters. The people who matter are the people in my district. Mm-hmm. And what's being written about me in Germany or in Florida or anywhere else is not really particularly relevant. What's relevant is that I have to go out and meet my future constituents and persuade them that I'm the right person to go out and fight for them.
Where I find it interesting isn't that it matters that a German newspaper would write about you. It's interesting that they thought that this one little Senate race in Texas was important enough to write about the fact that you're running. They didn't run an article that the twin brother of another senator is running in that race, and that would be a first. They didn't write about the wife of the attorney general who used to hold this seat is running in this race. That would be a first too.
She knew indictment.
But they thought,
right?
No, she's not.
He is. And by the way, the news today about that is that his securities fraud trial is on hold until they until Collin County can figure out how to pay the prosecuting attorneys on that. Because Collin County is having a fit over bearing its responsibility to bring somebody to justice, if, you know, and to bring it to trial. The prosecuting attorneys haven't been paid in a year.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like they need a yard sale.
But I find it interesting that they're finding that the marriage equality plaintiff running for a state Senate seat is newsworthy. I just find that fascinating.
Well, and the interesting thing is, it is in one sense it's newsworthy, and in another sense it's not. You know, Vic and I met Texans all across Texas as marriage equality plaintiffs, and not one of those people ever came up to us and said anything negative. They were all complimentary and encouraging. And even in Gun Barrel City, Texas, where we have a lake house, which, by the way, we might have to sell if I win, because we cannot afford a house in Plano and a house in Gun Barrel City and an apartment in Austin. But even the people in Gun Barrel City, as rural as that could be, came out, and when we were there and after the news of the lawsuit being filed, came out in what Vic calls a flash mob. Yeah. The neighbors,
party flash mob.
Exactly. They all came out and were complimentary and just so embracing. And so, I think the Texans that we know are, that was part of what persuaded me that I should run, was that the Texans that we've come to know don't care who I love. They don't care who I marry. They do care whether their kids get a good education. They do care whether their streets are congested. They do care whether their property taxes are going up too much. Those are the kind of issues that they care about. They don't care about bathroom bills. And so, you know, I think while it's going to be newsworthy, we're actually going to show the rest of the country and the world that Texas is more pragmatic and more accepting than a lot of people currently think they are.
Mm-hmm. Texas can be a leader, so there's that.
So speaking of being embraced and respected, you went to law school with our current governor.
Correct.
Has he reached out to you to congratulate you on running, or?
And did he mention you in his book?
The answer to both of those questions are no.
Well, there's more of a story to it than just, oh, we knew each other in law school. Mm. Do you want to tell that story?
Sure. I went to law school with Greg. We were friends. He was 1 year ahead of me. We would get together frequently on Fridays or Saturday nights, and with his wife, and we'd have drinks for dinner, and we talk politics, and we virtually never agreed on anything. Sadly, it's been so long ago, I don't remember what we argued about, but we did argue about it. And
if it was current events, it was probably World War II.
No.
But I don't remember.
You're one to talk, by the way.
That's hilarious.
Are you implying that I'm actually older than Mark?
Perhaps.
I'll point out it was my father who served during World War II, just to be clear. We were friends. So that when and I was clerking in Tulsa when he was injured, and I heard about it and was, of course, very shocked and sad to hear about it. So I flew down from Tulsa to be by his side with his mother and his wife, and just to encourage him. He showed a lot of grit and determination and had a smile on his face, and frankly was far more upbeat than I would have been in a similar circumstance. And then subsequently, a year later, he tried to recruit me to his law firm, and I got a job offer at his law firm. I didn't accept it. I went to San Antonio instead. But we've known each other and we're friends for a long time and exchanged Christmas cards and so that's how I know him. Obviously he's not he wasn't supportive of our litigation, and he wasn't supportive and I'm confident he won't be supportive of my run. But he's I haven't seen or talked to him in ages. It's, I think the last time I saw him maybe was around 2003, something like that. 2002, I was in Austin for a seminar, and he was one of the speakers, and I was sitting in the restaurant, and he came in, and I got up, and we chatted briefly, and that's really the last time, and I don't remember the exact date, maybe it was 2004 or 5, but that's the last time I've talked to him, and I hadn't talked to him before that for years, but that's how I know him.
And wouldn't that be something if he goes to Austin and the two of them, like, they don't have to agree, they don't have to vote the same way, but they talked? Because that doesn't happen anymore.
No, that doesn't happen anymore, and that's really, that is one of the things that I think I can bring to the table. I've been a business lawyer for 32 years, and a transactional lawyer as well. And so what I've done my entire career is to figure out what my client wanted and what the other side wanted and try to find ways to bridge a gap to reach a deal. And generally, I've been able to accomplish that. And I think I can do that in Austin if I'm elected. Obviously, there are going to be issues that we're never going to reach an agreement on. I am never, ever going to agree that the full equality for LGBT Texans is negotiable. I'm never going to agree that voter suppression is okay. I'm never going to agree that targeting minorities in any way, whether it's show me your paper laws or otherwise, is acceptable. But on those issues that we can agree or that are persuadable, I will absolutely work with Republicans and Democrats to reach solutions for the better of the state.
And we're talking to Mark Ferris. He's running for State Senate District number 8, which is most of Collin County. This is Lambda Weekly, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Valletta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. And our guest is Mark Ferris, running for State Senate District number 8, which is most of Collin County, a little bit into Dallas County as well. His husband Vic is here to refute anything that Mark says. So, Mark, when you, or Vic, when you met Mark, he was still in reform school, right?
Yes. This was back in the 60s. Good heavens.
How did you two meet?
97. A friend of mine, when I was in San Antonio, had a party for his birthday. He was getting promoted, being transferred overseas, etc. And so they invited me to the party. I went. And it was in the summer. All the doors were open. It was really hot. There were mosquitoes everywhere. I had to keep moving from room to room because there was this annoying guy that kept following me talking about politics. Politic this, politic that. I could barely escape this person.
And that finally, was Dan Patrick, right?
No, because I wasn't in the bathroom. So, right, I had gone before I went to the event. So then I left. As I was going, the person whose party it was there for said, hey, Mark Ferris wants to ask you out. And so I said, I'm already dating somebody, but if everyone as a group wants to go out and do bowling or maybe movies or dinner or something, I'm happy to do that and meet people that way. And he promised he'd pass on that information. And the only thing he passed on was the phone number. He didn't say anything else. So it made for a bit of awkwardness later, but I'm glad it all worked out the way it did.
Yeah. We went. I invited him. I waited a respectable couple of days because I didn't want to
three
appear.
Three days.
I didn't want to appear
Southern way.
Well, yeah, exactly. I didn't want to appear desperate or too eager, you know. So
or pushy.
I think the word pounce was actually used.
Or pushy.
Exactly. So I called him up and invited him to go to dinner with some other friends, and he went, and then on the way home, he explained to me, after I paid for the dinner, he explained to me that...
I did offer my half, just to be fair.
Yes, he did. I'm kidding. It was he was wonderful. And so I decided then that it was better to be his friend, if that's all I could be, than not to know him at all. So we hung out as friends until he and the guy he was dating broke up, and then I pounced, and I
didn't mention the word pounce was used. Yeah.
Hey, and I asked, keeping it real.
Immediately asked him out on a real date, at which he accepted.
A real date, by the way, to a fundraiser.
Which, yeah.
Well,
a fundraiser campaign, federal club. Right,
so romantic.
A precursor to what actually happened.
And here's another issue that I think your constituents might want to know, and that is a serious issue. You are pro-choice when it comes to doggy doors.
Exactly. We do not.
We do not discriminate against any doggy doors.
For the listeners, we had a discussion ahead of time about doggy doors, and I personally am not a fan of them. I do not want other varmints coming into my house.
Because they will.
But I said I would not. I would absolutely oppose precluding anyone else from making that choice on their own.
Well, there you go. But you know, we have a doggy door. We're very pro doggy door, and we've had varmints come in. But woe to them! You know, with our pups inside.
Yes. So we used to be where you guys were, Patty. We had a doggy door, but one too many varmints were brought in. After 8 years, we had
one
to close.
One too many screams in the
night. Yeah, yeah. One too many screams in the middle of the night. Like, what is that? So had to close it up.
My house. We were off of this creek, and the creek wandered down to the Trinity. We had a bobcat in our house one time.
Oh my God!
That was the end of that doggy door.
Yeah.
Vic, as the good political wife, Democratic political wife, you've planted your vegetable garden, I understand.
I have, yeah. It'll be blueberries, tomatoes, blackberries, and rosemary. Mom sent me a rosemary for Christmas, which is absolutely lovely. So yes, we've got the garden. Come on down.
Very cool.
And I'm working on him having the adoring Nancy Reagan stare. We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, right now it's just vacant.
Yeah, that works. I want to talk a little bit about what you're going into the Senate to do. And the two main issues that you talked about, transportation and education. Because we talked a lot about that you were the marriage equality plaintiffs, as if, okay, now that we won, now we're going to do something in the Senate about that. Your race has nothing to do with that.
Craig, I'm running as a Texan, mm-hmm. who's lived in the state for 32 years and lived in my district for 14 years, and I'm running to represent and fight for all of my constituents. I'm not running as to be a gay Texas state senator. That is not what I'm running to be. I just am running to be
or the marriage equality state
or marriage
senator.
Marriage equality is the law of land. So I'm not running.
And you learned a lot during that fight.
I did learn a lot from that.
People, yeah.
But exactly, I'm running to help advance education. I'm running to help advance improvements in transportation. I'm running to listen to and fight for my constituents on a variety of issues.
One of them is education.
One of them is
education. And Josh lives in that district. You live in that district, right? I know, but it comes down into part of Dallas.
I don't think he does live in that district.
Oh, okay, so we don't have to worry about the fact...
It's just a small sliver.
So we don't have to worry about the fact that Josh hates kids.
Oh, well, there you have it. Yeah.
That's what I was getting at.
I
think we should worry about that as an independent issue.
Look, I mean, Vic and I do not have kids. But
three beagles.
Yeah, three birds.
Three kids.
That don't have a doggy door.
Well, we don't have children. But one of the reasons we moved into Plano was because its schools are so good. We knew that the property values would remain, and that's essential for making sure that Plano continues to be the city, and that Frisco continues to be the city, and McKinney and Allen, Richardson,
New Hope,
that all those cities continue to thrive, and it's all hinges upon maintaining very good schools, because people generally do not want to move into cities that do not have good school systems. We must not do anything that's going to harm that. And one of the things that's been pushed by some of the leadership, by Dan Patrick, and may probably be pushed by my opponents on the Republican side, are vouchers. And that essentially takes money away from the public schools and gives it to private schools, and who, by the way, are not even obligated to abide by the same standards that the public schools are. So let me give you a perfect example of why that would be so bad. The Plano School District has debt for building their schools and their facilities and equipment of about $470 million. If you take away money from Plano, if the state takes away money from Plano and gives it to a private school, that debt does not go away. You still have to service that debt. So the result is that Plano will have to raise property taxes to make up for the loss of revenue that has now gone to private schools. So it actually would be harmful both to the citizens of Plano, and it would be hurtful to the schools. So, and it's also the wrong idea, because the Texas Constitution actually obligates the legislature to make sure that it funds private public education and not private education, and I take that constitutional obligation seriously.
The other issue, and let's get to any other issues that you see important in your race, transportation. When I'm coming out of Dallas going north, I can't stand going north of LBJ for one real reason: the traffic.
It's
worse up there.
Yeah.
It's worse up there than it is in the city lately. Mm-hmm. I know you don't have the solutions to this. And I know one of our state representatives who has been in our show, Celia Israel, that's her main thing. Because in Austin, which has doubled in size in the last 20 years, I mean, literally doubled population in last 25 years, all these roads that they had to build for people, for double the population, they didn't build a whole road through. They built a section of it, and then it stops. And then a little bit more of it, and it stops. And it drives people in Austin just crazy.
I mean, here we GPS crazy too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, part of my solution is this, actually, on that issue. One was already talked about, the need for high-speed rail, and the fact that that helps, that's privately financed, that helps free up monies for other transportation issues. So that's part of the solution. Part of it is also to find a way to make sure that those who are using the highways that are not paying into the gas tax wind up pay something for the use of the roads. But really a third approach, which kind of keeps going back to the issue that I raised earlier about us not focusing on the right issues and focusing instead on the wrong issues, is we're not spending enough time on those issues. We need to stop talking about bathroom bills. We need to start spending our time on education and on transportation. If we do that, instead of being diverted into the issues that are divisive, we will, I think, come out ahead, and we'll all reach a solution that will be acceptable to all. And my skills as a business attorney of trying to bridge the gaps between people with different interests and different views who are all trying to reach common ground, that I think I can help accomplish that.
You know, one of the big problems that we have that we didn't solve because we were worried about bathrooms this session, CPS, Child Protective Services, where kids were sleeping in offices and it's so understaffed because the population of the state keeps growing and the number of people we have is not growing.
And the legislature continues to do nothing significant to change it for CPS.
Right, because we're worried about bathrooms. We're worried about where people pee. One of the obvious solutions is higher the number of people that you actually need. Any other ideas like that?
The Texas legislature did this past session appropriate, and I'm trying to remember the exact number. I think it was $500 million more, $300 million of which I think is roughly my recollection for hiring more personnel and paying them adequately for the workload that they endure. I applaud that. And I think more of that should be done. So they need to digest, if you will, the hirings that they're undertaking with that $300 million, and then come back to the Texas legislature. Hopefully I'll be a part of that. That can help determine what the appropriate need is then to address that. But obviously, it does need to be addressed. It is something that the state of Texas has caused, and it is something that the state of Texas needs to address. And we need to do it in a way that avoids the federal government having to tell us how to solve that. We need to solve our own problems.
Mm-hmm. I think it's so interesting, this little factoid about Texas state senators. A senator in the state of Texas has about 100,000 more constituents than a United States congressman from Texas.
Correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or congressmember from Texas.
Yeah. Right.
There are only 31 Senate districts. You know, Texas only has chopped up 31 ways for state Senate purposes, and we have 34 congressional districts. So you have a lot more constituents to deal with than somebody going to Washington. I think that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing. And it's also part of what's exciting, to be honest, about running for this office. The geographical breadth of the district and the number of people in it and the diversity of it is really phenomenal. And sometimes it's as I look at that and think about all the people that I'm going to need to talk to and hear from and listen to and try to address their issues. Sometimes I sit there and think it's to some extent it can be overwhelming and because I feel the burden of trying to solve all those problems. And I'm running to try to fight for all of them. Vic and I and Cleo and Nicole filed a lawsuit to fight for what was right. And we've shown that we did not back down and we prevailed. And that is the kind of fight that I want to bring to the Texas Senate.
And, you know, that also brings up the point that you can make real local changes, where things in Washington, okay, that can affect things as a state, but here locally we can affect things right here, right now.
Mark, Vic, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us on this freezing last day of the year.
Thank you very much.
It's been very nice.
Wishing you a great 2018.
Yay.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Thank you.
And we'll
happy
be back.
Happy birthday to our two birthday boys.
Birthday boys here.
Thank you. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. And
next year.
Next year. Next week, next year. And
last show of the year.
Everybody have a happy New Year.